live to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 129. In the second and third block, we talk with Lindsay Hadley, an amazing woman. That's it. You'll find all about her story. I'm not going to spoil it for you. There's no spoilers happening right now, but that's coming back in the second and third block. Just a minute here, because we talked with Lindsay for a good long time. Wanted to read an email. This one from John Shaw. He says, "Hello, Cultural Hall show stars. What? Let me try that again. Richie and the Cultural Hall show stars. There we go. He says, "I'm a lifer and a huge fan of all things Mormon. The Cultural Hall show has been my favorite listen on the ride home from work on Mondays for a long time now." Says, "I've been thinking about an idea for a while that you could adopt in the show. There are weeks when you are unable to fill an entire show with a single interview, and you substitute by stringing two or three smaller sub-episodes. I was thinking that this could be called the Fifth Sunday Lesson. Just a thought. Keep up the great work, John." John, I love it. And if I can remember to do it, we will do that in the future with a Fifth Sunday Lesson. And then we can just post another episode, or we can just make that the Fifth Sunday Lesson. At random, because that's what it always feels like with the Fifth Sunday Lessons anyway. Remember to find us on Pinterest. If you do the Pinterest thing, it's The Cultural Hall. You can find us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. You can find us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/The Cultural Hall, or search The Cultural Hall. And then please, 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 we've asked you to do this before, and we'll ask you to do it again, I'm sure, in the future. You can find and subscribe to us on iTunes or on Stitcher, and leave a review wherever you listen to us. If it's Stitcher, leave a review there. If you listen to us on through your iTunes, leave a review there. It allows us to be visible from more and more people the more reviews we get. And it's nice to hear great words from you about what you love, or maybe what you don't love. I doubt that you're still listening if you don't love it at this point, but let us know what you think, and you can always reach out to us, richie@theculturalhall.com, or you can just go to theculturalhall.com and go to the Contact Us tab. Other things in the works coming up as well. A great episode next week with a Broadway star, Natalie Hill. In the upcoming weeks, we've got episodes about addiction. That will happen as well. All sorts of great things coming up here on the Cultural Hall, including in the second and third block, Lindsay Hadley.
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now. Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and joining me here is Lindsay Hadley. And I don't want to put you in a box. I don't want to label you. I don't want to give you a name that says, "You, Lindsay Hadley, is this." But I would be tempted to say do-gooder. Would that be a fair thing?
I think that would be fair. Yeah. For years, I've been working in the nonprofit sector doing social impact campaigning. And
all right. So now already you've lost me with the social impact. What? Let's dumb it down.
Yeah. So philanthropy, charity, and
philanthropy again. Dumb me down.
Work.
There we go. Nonprofit work.
Do-gooder stuff.
Yeah. Do-gooder stuff. Right. It almost does seem too basic. But like sometimes I think, or I hear philanthropy and I start to think of like these exotic things, and it's not necessarily.
It is pretty exotic. It can be.
It can be, but yeah. It doesn't always have to be, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Let me ask you, let's just get to know you. Born and raised in?
I was born and raised in Salt Lake City, but have lived abroad. I've traveled and lived extensively abroad. And when I was a little girl, like my first memories actually are in Hong Kong. And then I later lived in the former Soviet Union and Russia right after the fall of communism. And
jeez.
Yeah, I've had some I've traveled to over 35 countries, lived in Australia, and yeah.
Was it your folks? I mean, obviously you were living with your folks, but what did your folks do that made them travel. And you travel so much?
Yeah, my dad is an international consultant, so he brokers deals with foreign companies. And
I think you should do this deal, says dad. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we got to go to Hong Kong and live so that
for
I can do this.
For a couple years. Yeah, exactly. So it was really great because, even though Utah was always my home base, I actually grew up in little hick town up above Park City called Camas.
Okay.
Sure. Know?
There's a
rodeo, the Oakley Rodeo.
There's the Oakley Rodeo, and
Derby.
Also, but not what I'm thinking of. There's a nudist, at least a nudist colony sign on the way to Camas. Whether or not there's actually a nudist colony there, I don't know.
That's
but there
awesome.
Is a sign that's like nudist ranch or something
really?
Off to the side. Yeah.
That's
oh, you'll
awesome.
Notice it now. It's got a bear on it.
Maybe that's new.
Yeah.
That's come since I've left.
That's the only thing I know about Camas, actually. The rodeo. The Derby and nudists.
That's pretty much all there is to know.
So that was home base. And then, so give me an idea. So your first memory, you say you remember being in Hong Kong. That's how old?
So I would have been about three.
So three?
Yeah. So I lived there for about 3 years when I was 2 to 5.
Okay.
And then we moved back to Salt Lake and then, you know, lived up in Woodland is actually even smaller little, you know,
no nudist colony there.
No nudist. And I grew up in the mountains. So, you know, and then traveling and living abroad. Then when I was about 9 years old, we moved to Russia.
Like you do.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And then it was really neat because I think having been exposed to the global community, kind of realizing what disparity exists and seeing poverty, you know, we were living in Russia right after the fall of communism, and they had one of the severest depressions that Asia's seen in a long time. And what happened was, you know, the Russian ruble, which is their dollar, was the equivalent of an American penny. So a dollar for us would have been 100 times the value, you know.
Hmm.
And so we lived there and just saw people, you know, like for blocks lining up for bread, you know, and women who were trying to decide whether like to get winter boots or to get bread because they didn't have enough for both of their children. It was really intense. And so like seeing that really helped me consider like what a charmed, blessed life, you know, not only I had experienced, but the vast majority of us in the United States get to, you know, enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
And really made me think about, you know, how we can help. Why is it that because of where I was born, you know, I've had all these privileges and rights, whereas, you know, there's so much need in the world. And I think plenty of resources and passionate people who want to help share that, you know.
Did you think that even as a young kid at 9 and 10 years old in Russia, being like, why aren't we helping? Why are we different than these people?
You know, I think my parents are fantastic people, and they really led by example and did a lot to help a lot of people in small ways, you know, like those little kind acts of service that go unsaid.
Like what? Give me an example of something that they did that taught that example.
Yeah. So one example is my dad, one of his Russian business partners' secretary.
Was his name Boris? Tell me his name was Boris.
Exactly. Peter Sergovich is his name.
And see, so perfect enough.
Exactly.
It wasn't Boris, but it was perfect.
So he had a secretary whose little boy stuck kneading needles and
knitting needles.
Thank
That's
you.
A hard thing to say.
Wow, that was really
needing needles. No, wait.
Yeah, exactly. He stuck him. It was tragic. He stuck him into a light saw or, you know, an outlet.
Oh my gosh!
And was electrocuted. And the burns from his arms, like because of the lack of medical infrastructure and training, where he lived, they were going to have to amputate his arms.
Oh
and
my gosh!
He'd called my dad in the middle of the night, like, this is so sad. You know, what do we do? And my dad, interestingly, was like, we got to bring him here because apparently Utah has one of the best like pediatric burn victim units in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad happened to know, I think he had like a distant relation to a surgeon there. And anyway, just literally spent the next 24 hours raising money. And they actually had this boy flown over.
Jeez.
In the middle of the night to Utah, and they saved both of his arms, you know.
Jeez.
And it was just stuff like that, like, you know, the stuff we have access to. It's those little examples. My dad, you know, when we left Russia, we had...
How old?
I was 9, so 10. I left when we were 10. And he left everything we owned. Like, we'd bought a minivan to fit our big family and drive around, and he just gave it to the driver. And I just remember him, like, you know, the driver almost weeping because it was probably more than he would make in years of driving people around, you know.
When you say a big family, what are we talking?
Oh, there's 6 kids. So
6 kids,
I'm
mom and dad.
Yeah, so 8 of us. So, and then we were with another American family, so we like piled into this bus thing and would go into town to the only McDonald's in Russia, actually.
Really?
At the time. And this is insane, but like people would literally like line up. It would be hours and hours and hours in line. And here again, the privileged Americans, my dad would find a little Russian, you know, kid, and he'd be like, hey, you give him some money, and the kid would find a way in the back and get our order before everyone. I don't know how that happened, but You know, it's all about the bribes.
Sure. However you can do it. So that I love the vision of you and another American family like rolling up in one of those big like 15 passenger vans.
It's embarrassing.
Here we go. We're going to McDonald's, bribing kids in the line. All right, everybody got their Happy Meal. Let's get out of here.
Yeah, it was once a week we could go there just because it was just so like everybody wanted to go there. But it was an interesting time. But, you know, all of these experiences led me to caring about stuff. And then in my local community age, I think I was in 7th grade. I don't know how old are you, 13?
So it's like 12, 13, yeah.
My science teacher was talking about recycling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Camas didn't have any form of recycling. They didn't have any kind of recycling bin or anything. And he was
Throw it in that pile. Doesn't matter.
In the bushes, yeah. You know. Anyway,
keep it off the road. That's all I care about.
Exactly. And so he was talking about it. And he kind of challenged us to do something about it. And I took the challenge. So I started a club called the Trash Bashers.
Yeah.
And we put together,
Tell me you had a t-shirt.
Exactly. Yeah. It was great. We made it cool. We had, if you come and meet during lunch in Mr. Lambert's office, you can get pizza. You know, I knew how to like incentivize and I made sure like the best looking 7th graders were in it. And and then like, you know, pretty soon we had this little tribe and like we actually went to the local Rotary Club, you know. And I went and asked these Rotarians for $5,000 to put in the first recycling bin in our community. And I promised that we'd clean it out, you know, mm-hmm. our club would. And like, how could you turn down a chick with like awesome bangs, you know, yeah. from the late 90s? So they said yes. And they gave us this check. And I learned at a really young age, like not only leadership, but incentivizing people. And then more than anything, that people will get behind you if you have something worthy, you know.
Now, did you learn it or was it like mom and dad going, all right, now this is what you need to do now and this is what you need to do now? How much was you and how much was parents going, oots, oots?
Yeah, it wasn't the parents as much. They were always supportive and they, you know, but it was definitely, but, you know, in that instance, I have to give the credit to the teacher who was organizing it, spearheading it, you mm-hmm. know, under his direction. But, no, yeah, it was something, I mean, and that just kind of spurred on it seared in like a belief system that people will support me if I want to do good. And so, you know, I kind of from there, I became obsessed with service. Like it was literally like my hobby, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would always find, you know, I'd go visit the elderly with, you know, and I'd find ways to volunteer. I'd start service clubs and, you know, raise money and put in clean water wells in different countries. And at 17, I raised money and went with my best friend to Kenya.
Just you and your best friend with an organization?
Yeah, we went with an organization, one of those humanitarian trips. And that definitely changed my life. That's when I realized like, okay, this is more than just something I do because it's a way of life for me and I mm-hmm. love it. It's like, I want to make this my career. I want to find a way to forever be doing this professionally.
It's an interesting thing because at 17 years old, I think the furthest thing from most teenagers' mind is let's go to Kenya, best friend, and help, you know, build wells. I think most kids are like, that boy or this video game or where's the car? Or
I was thinking about boys too, but no, I think.
But Kenyan boys.
Yeah, no. You know, it was interesting because like, I think a lot of young people really, it does excite them, you know, and, mm-hmm. And actually when I later went to college and got my emphasis in international development, I majored in sociology, so behavioral science, and trying to understand, like, you know, what causes these systemic problems of poverty and issues, and how do you mobilize people to change, mm-hmm. and how do social movements work, and I just became really passionate about all that, and I actually interned in college for a local Utah nonprofit called Youth Link,
okay,
and they take high school and college age kids to different countries on these trips, but the interesting part, they do something really cool. They actually have local service component where you have to do 100 hours of local service in Utah in order to earn the opportunity to go on the trip. And then they get a sponsorship. They get like $1,000 scholarship to go towards their trip. So it's very carrot. And like I worked for a couple of years as their international service coordinator. And I took people and facilitated dozens of trips in third world countries. So we'd go in the remote areas of the Amazon, you know, in jungle in Peru, mm-hmm. and go to Thailand right after the tsunami, and in Africa and Mexico, we go all over and we would bring people there. And it was really incredible. Like a lot of people just wanted to go for the trip maybe initially, but when they started doing the local service, you know, and realized after coming back that, you know, nobody's going to fill that need unless you do. We saw like 95% of our alums actually continue to serve at the same rate they were doing before, which is pretty impressive, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because you brought out in all that sort of the exotic, you know, I think a lot of people do get involved. Unfortunately, we go, cool, Africa would be fun. Yeah, okay, fine, I'll build a school, but yeah. Africa would be fun and I can do it and I can raise money and people will pay for part of my trip to Africa. Whereas if I just wanted to go to Africa and said, hey, will you help pay for part of this trip? People would say no.
Yeah.
But kind of this humanitarian, do you feel like it is just one of those things that, like, if you can just get people to do it, that's the selling thing?
Yeah, you know what? That's the interesting part. Like, those humanitarian type trips are actually not the most impactful, like, in terms of for people living in poverty or, you know, and the worst thing to do is come in thinking you're some savior, like, I'm going to save lives because I, like, went and, like, painted
a building. But people do think that.
And they do. And that's, like, that's, I don't know if there's a, you've ever heard about the book called The White Man's Burden, but it really goes into the psychology of, like, we actually cause a lot of problems out of our best intentions. Like, for example, this is an incredible story that I learned as a case study in college that has stayed.
Where did you go to college, by the way?
I went to a couple different. I went to Southern California.
Oh, you couldn't hack it at one, huh?
Right, right. I played soccer, and so I had a scholarship. I played at UVU, and I was in Southern California before that, and then I actually finished at the U, my degree. So, okay. But long story short, I know personal examples. I'll give a personal example. It's a strong one. We built a clean water filtration system in Yanomono, Peru. And this village, you know, we were so stoked because it was really sustainable. They could sell bottled water then to, like, tourists as they came through the Amazon and then sustain the chemicals that would cost to keep this filtration pure for them to all have potable water. And we kept finding that people kept still getting diarrhea and still kept getting waterborne diseases in the village. We didn't understand how this was happening. And after, like, you know, after a couple months of investigation, we found out that the villagers were using the same buckets they were feeding their pigs with and cleaning their floors with and bathing in. Mm-hmm. They were using that to carry the potable clean water. Mm. So they didn't understand about the sanitizing of the transference. And so then we had to go in and teach them how to bleach and, like, clean. And anyway, it was just amazing, like, the things we took for granted. One of the most profound ones that I've ever heard was a man who went to, I think it was Kenya, and he went to a Maasai village where they live in dung homes, like, so cow dung and mud homes. They built these, like, huts, right? Yeah. And the women, they cook over fires indoors. And a lot of these children were getting smoke inhalation problems, and the women were even passing out in the fires and getting burnt.
Oh, my gosh.
Because, you know, there was no ventilation inside these little domes. And so he thought, such good intentions, I'll just make these little makeshift chimneys. And so he, like, created these little chimneys and, like, attached them to each of these buildings, and then it was ventilating and everything was fine. Well, he came back a year later and the entire village had been wiped out because the smoke was the one thing that kept the flies from eating their homes.
Ugh.
And so he destroyed their entire way of life trying to help them.
Yeah.
And that story just, like, sits and resonates. Like, we can sometimes actually cause more problems. So the most, I encourage people to go on trips and experience it, but know that it's a cultural exchange. It's a learning experience. It's not, you know, you spending $5,000 to go to Kenya is not going to be the most.
I'm changing the world with that $5,000.
Way, right? You're better off spending that $5,000, like, donating to an organization who then could, you know, do microenterprise loans for, you know, hundreds of people and then help them become sustainable. You know what I mean? There's better ways to do.
It's an interesting thing, though, because if it takes $5,000 and me going to Kenya to see that, to essentially convert my life to being more service oriented.
Yeah. Then it's worth it.
Then it's worth it.
Yeah, totally. That's why we did it at Youth Link. And that's why I believed in it, because it sears in a service ethic. It creates lifetime humanitarians. So those experiences, it did it for me, you know. So those have a real power. But it's just managing it well, not bringing a lot of what we call junk to the jungle. You know, sometimes we just bring, like, toys. And then, I mean, that stuff is just, you harm local economies. There's arguments to all this. But you have to look at cost benefit. What's the most important thing? But ultimately, like, experiencing poverty, seeing people, being on the ground with people who live differently than you is incredibly inspiring and palpable way to get an education. No.
Talk about maybe, actually, you know what? Coming back in the third block here of the Cultural Hall, I want you to share maybe, and I hate to do this because it seems sort of pandering, but I promise that there's a point to it. Maybe one of the most heartbreaking stories or situations that you've been in or heard of or been a part of. We'll come back and do that here in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the third block of the Cultural Hall, joined with Lindsay Hadley. I'm going to just go ahead and throw it out there as do-gooder. You know what? I'm giving you a label, so take it.
You can't. Well, I think I'll... Thank you. But you got to take it, too. I just learned you give blood every 8 weeks. The Red Cross.
Yeah, but that... I mean, everybody has blood, right?
But not everybody's willing to give it.
Listen, they can take it all. In fact, I tried giving every week, and they wouldn't take it.
No.
That's how much good I tried to do. But apparently, there's this thing where your body needs blood or you die. Where we left off was, I kind of would like to paint a picture for people about why I feel like this is so important and why it can't just be, well, that's what Lindsay will do. Lindsay can do that, and she can help people and others. I mean, everyone I feel like has some sort of thing, but there's a sense of urgency and a great importance that needs to be paid to this, and that's why I had you come in here and talk about it. So, paint a picture for me.
So, okay, for why it's important, you know what? It blesses. It's totally self-serving. It blesses us. I mean, the work that we do in the world as a global society to end atrocities and disparity and poverty and all these issues actually benefit us. I mean, they find that, you know, communities that have less poverty also are less of a threat to us in terms of national security.
Okay.
We have issues of, I mean, little things like, for example, I run a consultancy now called Hadley Impact Consulting, and mm-hmm. we work with
named after who?
I know, right? Teasing. Right? I know. It's so embarrassing. It started out just as my LLC to do my own work. And then it turned out that I had to hire a whole team and had to have a kind of a forward-facing brand.
Oh, this is going so well. Now I have to hire a whole team.
Okay, I deserve that.
This is such a burden.
I deserve
that. This great company which I've formed.
It was just for me for tax reasons.
Sure.
But then it turned into something, yeah, that we're really blessed in doing some great work. And one of my clients is actually... Deb and Hugh Jackman. So his wife has been this incredible advocate for orphans and adoption. And they adopted their two children. And we're planning this global campaign with them. And they're such wonderful people. Like, mm-hmm. I always tease my kids. I'm like, hey, I'm going to Wolverine's house. You know, yeah. Like, I'm headed out to New York. See you, kids. They think that's awesome. But essentially, you know, with the adoption issue, like 2/3 of all prison inmates were in foster care.
Hmm.
They didn't have permanent loving families. And so when you think about like what that does psychologically, what it does to our systems, what it does to our society, like it actually, there's huge implications to us as a global world. I mean, we're not isolated. And so it's self-serving both in terms of what's right for humanity and self-preservation, but it's also just feels so great. Like, you know, I think most people find a lot of value, self-value when they find that they're living in behalf of others.
Well, and then there's also a very religious thing of taking care of our brothers and sisters, right?
Yeah.
We can go there for a minute,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. Like, you know, anybody with some kind of a spiritual context believes that's the morally right thing to do. But even if you don't have any faith at all, you can have faith in humanity, in the goodness, the innate goodness of all of us. And that when we see people as people instead of just statistics or mm-hmm. whatever, right? You're going to want to get up and do something. But the most inspiring things I've seen, you know, I mean, you mentioned right before the break to tell a sad story. One of the saddest stories, but also the most inspirational that I've ever known is a woman named Somali Mom. So for a couple for a little while, for about a year and a half, I did work in the human trafficking space where we were trying to combat sex trafficking in children here in the United States, interestingly.
Yeah. Crazy.
We did an episode a little while ago about
sex trafficking.
There you go. And it happens here in Utah. So, but this woman, Somali mom, was from Cambodia, so where it's, you know, I think the highest per capita child sex trafficking happens. And she was sex trafficked from the age 9 for most of her life till she was a teenager. And she wrote a beautiful book about it. But out of coming out of this horrible, horrific hell of a life, she actually started a charity and has saved thousands of girls from the same, you know, from the same plot. And it's incredible. I mean, to hear her tell her story and like to see her actually use her pain to like rescue others. I mean, that stuff's so inspiring. Mm-hmm. You know, I can tell you so many stories. Like I, you know, there's a boy I met in Peru, in Iquitos, which is the city there. He was a street child. He didn't have parents. He was, you know, totally living in abject poverty, just begging for food and figuring
Isn't
out.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy. And there's tons of these children all over the world. There are millions and millions. And this little boy was so sweet, and he could speak a little bit of English, probably from the tourist interactions. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I made friends with him, and long story short, and you know, with just $50 every quarter of the year, he was able to go to school. He's now a medical professional. He actually he's gone on to college. I mean, changed his whole life, you know, and it ended the cycle of poverty. Like, so you can make huge impact on an individual scale, and then on a global scale, you know, the power that we have as a collective is so incredible.
You know. And I don't know what the disconnect is, but you see those commercials that are on TV where it's like for just 50 cents a day, right? And and I think maybe as we horrible United Statesians or whatever, we privileged folk, I guess, for whatever reason, we don't recognize that as a really serious, you know, claim or opportunity, or, you know, I don't know what the disconnect is, but I feel like if you met the kid and the kid was like, listen, have that soda or absolutely change my life. Go ahead. You pick. I think that you'd be like, well, I think I'm going to pass on this soda and change your life completely. Yeah. But we have this disconnect because it's not in the room with us?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why rolling up your sleeves and getting to know these people will change you. I mean, we have in Utah one of the highest per capita refugee resettlement communities. We have tens of thousands of refugees that have come here from places where their lives are literally in threat, or they're living in poverty, or they're, you know, been torn from, you know, their loved ones, suffered genocide, all kinds of persecution, and they've moved here and they have no one and they need our support, and like we can go befriend them and work with them. So you don't have to travel overseas to see that. You can see all kinds of things here in our own backyards. And I think that, yeah, you're right. People, they've proven statistically that if you did a campaign around one person, like my best friend's stepfather actually was died in a car accident, and the family was suffering huge financial trauma from that. He was diagnosed with cancer just before the accident. And anyway, I did this little campaign asking loved ones, friends and family to help the family kind of offset some of these medical costs. We raised $10,000 in a week. I mean, it's because it's that person, it's that connection. You're absolutely right about that. So look, those commercials, they're real, and you do help people. I think people have a distrust around charity. They wonder, like, is my dollar really being used? How much is going to overhead? But, and that's why as a donor, you know, you kind of have the responsibility and the privilege to check out. You can learn, it's public record. You can learn anything you want about a charity, and you can get insight into which is the best ones to place your resources with.
Let's talk about this, because I think as members of the church, and I'm going to take that leap, right? Member of the Mormon church. Yeah.
Yeah. I am. Yeah. That's funny. I didn't know what you were saying. I was like, I'm Mormon.
Yeah. You bet. No, we hadn't talked about that before, but I had been told, and that's obviously why you were invited here. What? How does the LDS Church do about it? I mean, it seems like it's often being sung praises of, you know, kind of maybe the first in, or you know, thanks to the LDS Church for that.
Yeah.
But how do they do?
You know what? We do a great work. Even our hardest critics can't really poke many holes in our philanthropy in terms of how efficient it is, how little overhead, you know, we operate. and how much accountability we have to each dollar that we spend. So it's very impressive. We do, obviously, we do humanitarian aid abroad and then also local things here. But I think that one of the things, I actually know Rick Foster, who runs the church's welfare program globally. He's a wonderful man. And he always talks about, I wish church members could understand that they don't just have to serve in the four, you know, in the walls of their chapel. You know what I mean? Like, they basically, a lot of times we think, because, hey, I've got a calling and I've got my visiting teaching and I've got, you know, young women's and scouts, like, I'm good, I'm doing my service. Right. And that does feel like that. We have limited time. But he's trying to say, look, there are many organizations outside of the church that you can give your time and money to. And he wishes members had more trust and more engagement. And they hope to encourage more of that.
Are there organizations within the church that are church sponsored that are like the taking trips and going and checking, you know, out and being that proactive?
You know, they have affiliated groups. I mean, the church, it's not officially the church, but they have church will finance or support
like
different
who?
Groups. There's Enterprise Mentors International is one where they give micro enterprise loans and you can do trips and go visit these people. But you know, the church has more, even more impressive, again, talking about effectiveness with your dollar. The Perpetual Education Fund is just astounding. That's totally an inspired program.
And have you seen, cause here's the thing, as far as that goes, I think with most church members is we go, I'll donate to that.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to meet anyone
that
has experienced it. And I feel like if we could take a dozen of them on the road that are really well spoken and be like, hey, my life has now changed. I feel like if we could do that, I think that to me would be so much a greater change.
Yeah, I wish that the church was better at telling the stories of success. And like if you look for it, right, if you like go in and look for, if you go online and check out the Perpetual Education Fund, you'll find those individual stories.
Sure.
But I mean, they're
loudspeaker. Let's loudspeaker this
exactly.
thing.
I just think it could be a lot better at amplifying that because it's really beautiful work what's happening. And it's perpetual. It's sustainable because you give your gift and it will keep giving. That's amazing. Microenterprise loans are like that. There's a lot of powerful ways to give. But, you know, one of the most exciting things that we can do is as Rick was trying to encourage, you know, is find something that you feel really passionate about. So you can take your gifts, whether you're an accountant, you know, whether you're a dancer, a musician, whether you're a DJ.
Yeah, there you go.
Whatever it is that you do, you can take it and use it to benefit others. And I mean, I can't even understate that enough. Like, I've seen people have major impact from you know, just making jewelry and selling and getting awareness and raising money. And, you know, I mean, you can do anything. So you can take your natural born gifts and find something that you're most, whatever it is, if you're like, hey, I really care about gender equality. I really care about clean water. I resonate with people who are suffering from mental illness. Whatever it is, you know, like really you can kind of consecrate your life and time and find ways to be further engaged. And to me, it surprised me how much people kind of, they're like, where do I start? You know?
Right. And so where do they start?
Well, you could totally, you know, hit us up at Hadley Impact if you want to go to our website, HadleyImpact.com.
Hit up one of her many employees.
Shameless plug there. But we'd love, like, we take interns and we work on tons of different campaigns. Or I one of my favorite things is kind of helping people feel empowered to keep doing, to do good. So my experience with dozens of different charities and, you know, different sectors and different causes, I'd love to, you know, be a resource to anybody. But yeah, you can go online, you can check out amazing different resources. We have like Utah volunteerism, huge emphasis out of the state, and they have a bunch of places you can volunteer locally. You can just really, truly, it doesn't take much. You got Google and you can find somewhere, you know.
Google. Now, what is this Google?
It's my good friend. He lets me know everything whenever I
literally
want.
Literally everything. I want to talk about a couple of your projects that you've got going on. Where do you want to start? Film Race? You want us to talk Global Citizen or the Global Poverty Project?
I'd love to talk about the Global Citizen and Global Poverty Project. So that'd be great. We could start there. Thank you.
Let's do that.
So in 2011, I moved to Australia with my husband, who's an Aussie surfer.
Oh, here we go. Now married. That's a whole different thing. Because being a do-gooder single is a lot easier, I think, than being a do-gooder married.
Yeah, I'm married with two kids. I have a 6-year-old boy and a 4-year-old boy.
Okay, so now it just got even more difficult.
Well, this is what's so great is like today's technology and the abilities we have, you know, like I'll literally be on conference calls or I'll be sending emails when my kids are playing at the park or I'm folding laundry. You can multitask now. And I actually work from home. I never, I've turned down a lot of job opportunities that seem like once in a lifetime opportunities because I wanted to be home for my boys. I wanted to be a mom first.
Why?
And I feel it's my divine calling to be available to them and be, you know, that's my first imperative. And then helping others outside of that would be only based on capacity after I've met that obligation to them.
And yeah, and all the women listening are going, yeah.
Well, and I love it, right? I mean, but it's incredible. Like, I've been really blessed that I could be able to have my cake and eat it too a little bit. But it's tough. You know, I don't sleep a lot. In fact, when I lived in Australia, the time difference, I produced the Global Citizen Festival for 2 years in a row.
Which is what?
It's a massive music festival. It's the largest charity syndication in history. In the last 2 years, we had 60,000 people on the Great Lawn in Central Park in New York City.
Wow.
The first year we had Neil Young, the Foo Fighters, the Black Keys, Kanon, Band of Horses, and we were able to generate $1.3 billion in funding commitments for the world's poor.
Oh, my gosh.
And so it's an amazing campaign.
So no big deal.
Right. Well, it's an incredible campaign. And so many amazing people helped make that possible. And as the executive producer, like, I had to be on a lot.
Wait a minute. That was your, that whole thing is you?
Well, it wasn't just me.
Well, no, but I mean, like, but okay.
Yeah. So,
all right.
So I had to be on a lot of these calls with, like, artists and their managers and the funding partners and the sponsors and it was incredibly awesome. Because,
Mom, can you push me in the swing? Hold on. I'm talking to Neil Young. Give me a second.
Exactly.
We're figuring out his rider. Hold on. I will push you in the swing in a second.
No, that literally.
Neil, about this?
That literally sometimes my life. I remember once I was on the phone with a billionaire asking him for $1 million. And my little boy came up and said, Mom, I got to go poopy. Like right in the phone. It was an epic moment. That does happen.
And the guy's like, I'll give you $1,000,000.1. Keep the $0.1 for yourself and take care of that kid's poopy. We'll get back to this in a minute.
It's really a funny life. It's kind of mind-boggling. I pinch myself sometimes, but no, but the time difference was perfect because I put my kids to bed at 7 and then I'd work. That's when the business hours were opening in New York City. And I'd work till about 1 in the morning. So all from home, right? And lots of Skype and anyway, but.
And the husband's like, I'm around, right? You remember
that's
this?
The tough
you remember
part.
Me.
Right. I'm not trying to play it off like it's easy. Like, you have to balance
no,
a lot of.
It's so easy. No.
A lot of juggling balls. And you just can make sure the glass balls don't get dropped, is the analogy I always use. And so I always, you know, my faith and my family and my health, you know, those are the balls you can't drop, you know? But I think it's a challenge for sure. But ultimately, I, you know, put these two helped with an inspiring group of people put these two festivals together. And what's so neat about it is that you, in fact, it's still going on now. You can go on to globalcitizen.org, which is a website, a platform we created, where it prompts you to take actions toward ending extreme poverty. So you can sign petitions, watch videos, read articles, donate, volunteer, buy stuff. You can do things in behalf of the world's poor and different charities that are all doing great work. And you can learn about all of them. And you can share stuff on, you know, on social media, like kind of collectivism stuff, and you earn points.
Cool.
And the points you garner these points, and then you can enter into winning tickets to our Global Citizen Festival. And we also have tickets to, we have over 100 touring artists, everyone from Katy Perry to Beyonce to One Direction. And they have all donated two tickets to their shows touring this year. And you can win tickets here in Salt Lake City by going on a Global Citizen and taking actions online. So, like, you can be this really good person in your pajamas and also win cool concert tickets. So this whole incentivizing action.
That's great. Is there going to be another Global Citizen concert? And when is
it? Yes. Yeah. So we do
in
it
in New York.
Yeah. It's every year in New York. And yes, we've been asked to annualize it for a long time. Everybody loves it so much. And, it, you know, it's such a global movement because we had 900,000 actions taken, like, for example, on our platform for the world's poor. And we were able to trigger huge funding commitments and put pressure on people, you know, amazing things. It's in September during the United Nations General Assembly meeting.
Okay.
So we do it when all the government leaders are converging in New York, and we use it as a huge platform and a huge to bring optics around ending extreme poverty. And so it's pretty cool. Like, you know, every time I go, like, backstage, I'm like, oh, hang on a minute. You know, one hand, I'm not even exaggerating, like, one hand, you're like, oh, hey, Bono, what's up? And then over here, there's the president of the World Bank, Jim Yong Kim. You know, like, you get prime ministers and royalty and celebrities all around you, and just like really inspiring moment. You can also watch a lot of the content online from the last 2 years.
So who's this year?
I can't say yet.
Come on.
I can't say, but it's going to be good. Yeah, it's
you can't tell
good.
Me anything?
I can't yet.
Can you tell me when you're going to tell people?
We should be telling people, I think, at least by late June or July, we would announce. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you can, you know, hit the races, try to get tickets. But ultimately, you can, like I said, you can get them here. The first time I joined the Global Party Project in 2011, they said, hey, because I had spent years now doing music festivals and concerts, and they'd heard about me from someone. So I got solicited. They said, hey, we want to put on this this music festival to end polio. And I thought, polio? I thought that was already eradicated.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, I knew that it was like 99% eradicated, but I thought that's like a done deal, isn't that? Like, and that's not very sexy. Like, how do we make that fun for a concert?
Give it up, you know, for polio.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, how do we make this cool? But their strategy was so intelligent, and what we did, it was so I think a miracle. Like, basically, what we did was we were advocating with the Australian Prime Minister, who at the time was named Julia Gillard, and we said to her, look, like, if we can demonstrate constituency, if we can show you that Australian voters want this, can you justify making a major commitment out of your foreign aid budget for polio eradication? And they hadn't contributed to this this effort. And yet it was started originally by Sir Clem Renouf, who was an Australian Rotarian, who actually like started first raising the money on a global scale,
mm-hmm.
and has raised billions of dollars to beat back polio like this. And of course, we know there's been other great, like the March of Dimes, and we've had, you know, because it used to be something. I mean, most of us,
crippling.
Oh yeah, like Elder Packer, for example.
Mm-hmm.
His symptoms we're seeing right now, where he's in a wheelchair and he's immobile, those are adult onset polio symptoms. Usually,
yeah.
when you get it as a child. So this has affected many people in our communities. We've had the blessings of not having to deal with it. So, you know, when I finally saw how powerful this was, that we could use a concert to get signatures. So we had people sign a petition to win tickets.
Cool.
So we had 30,000 people sign a petition, and we had, you know, Hugh Jackman and Bill Gates and Donna Karan and John Legend all get behind this movement and this festival. And anyway, it garnered major national media. And as a result, the following morning, she held a press conference, and alongside the Prime Minister of Canada and the UK, and then the President of Nigeria and Pakistan, so these five government leaders, because this was during their eve of Chugham, which is their Commonwealth dignitary meeting. So
okay.
all their world leaders, like the Queen of England,
sure,
was literally
Chugham,
there.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. The Queen of England was literally there. So all of these leaders were there. So we were able to like capture them and again, make them look really good.
Yeah.
And so the following morning of this concert, she has this press conference and announces $118 million to polio.
Jeez.
From this one concert and campaign.
Cool.
So I remember sitting in the audience being like, okay, this is how you do philanthropy.
Yeah.
You create massive conveners, and you don't ask the general public for their money per se. I mean, absolutely they can give, but you use their voice to get top-down commitments from the people who make decisions.
Yeah.
You know, so like, for example, right now this year in Australia, just as I'm really aware of what's going on there because I just moved back from there. But
welcome back.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's nice to be with people who speak English again.
Yeah, well, yeah,
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. But Tony,
no, you're not.
I know.
I've heard some Australian speak, and it's like, what? I know that it's basically the same language right now, but I don't understand.
No,
you.
It's really good.
It's like living in parts of Cleveland. I was like, I know what you're saying is kind of like what I'm saying.
Totally.
But
most Americans can't do the Aussie accent. In fact, I think I perfected, but I have to be like Steve Irwin. I have to like really overdo it. But basically, like, my husband says all Americans just they put on a British accent. It's painful. But anyway, Tony Abbott, who's the prime minister at the moment, just cut the foreign aid budget to the world's poorest, you know, in mm-hmm. half. And he just bought like $12 billion worth of fighter jets instead. You know what I mean? And you know, I understand there's all kinds of political reasoning and logistics that go into decision making. But if the public and the Australian people and the global population said, hey, that's wrong. You know, like this money should help these people before you know, do that kind of a thing. I think you would see that these government leaders listen. We're ultimately as jaded as you can be about politics. We are their employer. Like
mm-hmm.
we keep them in with their jobs. And so we can say with enough of us, we can say this is what we want.
Are you ever tempted? This is completely silly, but as you're with all these world leaders, are you ever tempted to be like, hey, here's a Book of Mormon and just like
I love that.
Photo op it and be like, Queen of England, Book of Mormon, right? You know
oh,
what I'm
yeah.
saying? Like, Like, you'd never do it, and it's the most untactful, and I know this is not what you wanted to talk about,
no,
but as
great.
I'm thinking about it, I'm like, man, having access to all those people and just having that one opportunity where it's like,
No, that's book? Great. I love that you brought that up. No, I love it. I don't just, like, you know, pull out my Book of Mormon from my backpack or something, but I do. I love talking about my faith, and I've been able to talk about it with literally, like, you know, I remember I sat down at Larry King's home. I went to his home. We had a fundraiser dinner, and I sat next to him.
Oh, he hears all about it from his wife.
Yeah, exactly. And it was amazing, like sitting down and talking to him about it, and he talked about how little people know what he's experienced, how little people know about Mormonism. Obviously, Romney's helped kind of create a lot of awareness and conversation, and we do get, you know, teased in the media and things like that. But ultimately, like, I find it inspiring. Like, we just had Kwaku Mandela, for example, Nelson Mandela's grandson, here with this film that I'm helping promote right now. And he came to Sundance, and we took him, you know, to Temple Square, and he literally said, "Oh, so the Mormons and the LDS Church are the same thing? I thought they were two different things."
Right.
And he's like, "I don't think you have anybody in South Africa." And touche, you know, we have an entire mission. We have, like, temple, you know, we go through and, like, actually start to make him aware. And it's so fun for me to do that, like, be able to be the first point of contact for a lot of these people and celebrities. And then they're like, "Oh, you're kind of," hopefully they think afterwards, "Oh, Mormons aren't that weird. Like, they're pretty normal, you know?"
Yeah. It's, and then the second he gets home to South Africa, you got two missionaries on his door.
Exactly.
And you're like, "Hey,
no,
see, we
and
did
I
it,
have,
people."
I mean, I have at times I have given Book of Mormons to colleagues or, you know, influencers or whatever, but it's all after a trusted relationship.
Sure,
or whatever.
Sure. But, well, and that's how it should be with anything.
Right.
It's not just like, "Hey, you have a Book of Mormon."
Just chuck it at you. Drive by baptism.
Yeah. No, I think that's such a fascinating thing. It also reminded me of one of my favorite quotes. I think it was after one of the tornadoes in Oklahoma or something like that. And their big press conference about everyone who's helped out. And you know, the governor, doesn't matter, mayor, whoever it was. But it was this highly publicized thing. It's like, "You know what? We really have to thank two organizations today who've really come together to help us, you know, recuperate from this terrible natural disaster. We'd like to thank the Mormon Church. And we'd like to thank the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints." And it just became this really funny thing, a viral video that it's like,
exactly.
All right, double thanks. We'll take it as double thanks.
Exactly. So it's really, you know, it's a privilege to be in these circles of influence. All the time I feel really humbled. I'm like, man, if they find out I'm a little Mormon mom, stay-at-home mom from Camas, Utah, they're going to kick me out of here.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, "You do not belong, lady."
Bono,
with your
Downey
dress, your Downey's Outfitters dress you're wearing that's $20. Like, you know, I remember, I've been to these, you know, I go to these meetings, seriously, and I'll be like, captains of industries, captains of the fashion world. Like, and I usually don't know, I'm just such an ignoramus.
Who's that?
It's pretty funny. I mean, I love it, but I mean, I have so much joy in being able to, you know, help. But honestly, like, doing service, it's not about the big optics. It's like, the most inspiring people are the people that do it with no visibility, the volunteers, the, you know, like, here we are at a concert and a celebrity's performing and they flew in on a private jet and they're really generous because they do it for free. They perform for free. And like Stevie Wonder this year, you know, this year's headline, we had Stevie Wonder, Alicia Keys, John Mayer, Kings of Leon, great, talented artists. And they all perform, you know, for, like, Stevie's charges $1 million a show. And so here he is performing for free.
Yeah.
But it was the interns who, for months leading up to, are running around and flyering and tickets and, you know, supporting and infrastructure and killing themselves and hadn't slept in days. And you're just like, dude, people are so good. Like, I just believe human beings have such a desire. And I think it comes to absolutely, like, we miss from the pre-existence, we miss the feelings of unadulterated love and unconditional love. And, you know, with the veil being drawn, like, sometimes we people in this mortality try to find that, you know, with sex, drugs, rock and roll, like, they try to fill it with money and there's this void because we miss that feeling. And we can gain it in mortality by cleaning that antenna and trying to tap into the spirit and by serving others. And when you feel love for others and you serve others the way Christ would, you get this sense of your own self-worth and his love for you. It's really intrinsic, I think.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Write that down. And we'll quote that thing right there. We don't have too much more time, and there's a couple other questions I want to ask you, but tell everybody about Film Raise.
Yeah, thank you. Speaking about, you know, spirituality and stuff, this film is not actually This film is not actually a...
Which film?
It's called, Beyond Right and Wrong. So it's stories of justice and forgiveness. It's not religious. It's about forgiveness. And honestly, every LDS member should watch this. Everybody should watch this, but
especially LDS members,
especially,
so pay attention.
Especially LDS members, because it's so beautiful, because you're watching this profound, extreme situations where people forgave. So it highlights stories. It's a documentary. It highlights stories of Northern Ireland, Palestine, Israel, and Rwanda, where people's loved ones are murdered.
Really calm, loving.
All conflict regions, yeah. Major conflict regions and genocides and things like this where, you know, loved ones were murdered. Like this one woman in the film, her 5 children were killed. And the killer's released from prison years later and literally knocks on our door and asks for food. I mean, imagine what you would do. And these people forgive. Every one of these people forgive. There's another woman whose father was bombed in Northern Ireland. And Pat, the man who killed her father, is released from prison. She goes and meets him, befriends him. And now they tour all over, you know, talking about reconciliation and peace in Northern Ireland.
Jeez.
I mean, and he says the most powerful line. He says in it, like in the film, all the things that I admire in you. Because if she had met him with all this resistance and anger and hatred, it would have been easier for him to justify what he did. Mm-hmm. But because she met him as a human being and loved him and forgave him, he said, all the things that I admire in you tell me in some measure the loss, because you would have gotten that from your father. And he breaks down talking about it. And you're like, wow, like, no, not only, not only can we forgive, but if people can forgive in that extreme situation, then what petty things am I holding on to that I could forgive? So it's very, it asks a lot of you. But what's really neat is we've used the film to actually create a major social impact campaign. And so we built FilmRaise, which is a website. You can go to FilmRaise. It's spelled FilmRaise.com. And you can choose a charity to watch this film for. You watch the film for free. You just have to put in your email so we can verify you're a real human being. And you can choose the Nelson Mandela Foundation, Malala Fund. There's 12 different charities doing great work. And you can watch the film in behalf of that charity, and a sponsor will pay them. So we've raised $500,000 to go to these charities.
Jeez,
so
awesome.
So you can, you know, literally just a click of a button and watching a great film that will bless your life, also bless lives of people all over the world. So.
How'd you meet your husband?
He was served his mission in Australia, and his companion was from Bountiful, so he was visiting his companion snowboarding. We met through some mutual acquaintances.
Hey.
It's a very serendipitous story. It's an epic tale of romance, but that's the guy version.
So I came to town and we met, and then we got married.
My husband tells me whenever you talk to a guy, tell the guy version.
Yeah. I actually wanted to hear the lady version.
It's really good. It's really good.
Okay, now you can't say it's really good and then not
it's
tell
long,
me.
It's long though. So, I'll try to shorten it.
Yeah, shorten it up for
okay.
me.
Okay, so he was here and we met through a mutual acquaintance. But what was neat was his buddy, who was from his stake back home. So imagine you're like in Australia and you just run into somebody that's an acquaintance from your stake. Like it was kind of random, but he ran into this guy named Jamie Tarr, who was a student up at the U. He came to America. He, you know, shamelessly shares to find a wife, you know?
Yeah.
So he was here.
That's what you have to do.
Yeah, he was here and he was taking like full credits, like 12 hours a day of institute or something to try to find this wife. And he was, at the Dollar Theaters and ran into my husband, and my husband was killing time because his buddy was working. And he's like, what are you doing? He said, I'm going to the Sheila's house. You should come with me, mate. You know, and this is my accent.
That's
and
perfect.
He goes, oh, yeah. And he's like, who are you going to see? She's like, I don't know, but her sister's super hot, so you should come. So they came and we met, and it was about an hour. And, you know, we flirted shamelessly, and it was like, I thought he was awesome, but I didn't entertain
him.
And
the accent helped every
right.
bit of
it's
it.
It's absolutely. Like, I married him. Yeah, I married him for the accent. He married me for the green card. It's all good. It's mutual benefit. But he left that day, and I was going to go backpack Australia with my same best friend that I went to Africa with.
Mm-hmm.
So he actually went home and called his dad and said, I met the girl I'm going to marry, which is really romantic now that we're married, but super creepy if you knew that at the time, right?
Right.
Like 1 hour. So like he never told me. He was smart. He played his cards right.
By the way,
yeah.
I just called my dad.
Yeah,
I told him we're going to get married.
It's so creepy.
You won't think it's so creepy later.
But it's so romantic and adorable.
Yeah.
But he was smart. So guys, play it safe. Hold that stuff close until it's actually
yourself,
legit.
Guys.
Until she's in love with you and going to marry you. But so he did that. And I went to Australia and... But in the meantime, trying to go to Australia, I was 6 months later, I was supposed to go. we met and we stayed in touch and we did like long distance and we became really good friends. So it was really great because we had all this platonic context before. Because usually, you know, relationships start out physical or whatever. Yeah. But like,
let's kiss. Okay.
Exactly. Because we lived on the other side of the world, like we were able to like have real substance to our relationship. It was really cool. And then when I went to go to Australia that summer, I got sick with meningitis and I almost died.
Oh my gosh.
And I had a seizure on my way to the airport. Like we were trying to go to the airport and I had a seizure and basically led me up in the hospital. So my husband never heard from me because we were supposed to be there. And he was like,
sure.
This is the girl I'm going to marry. So he didn't date anyone from that time we met. He was like saving up for me. He was waiting. So we just never returned emails or calls.
Which again, is a little creepy.
You
don't share that stuff to that.
Again, he was smart. Yeah. He didn't let me know. But
I haven't gone out with anyone since we met. All right, creep.
Exactly. He was really good. So I'm sick, dying, literally on my deathbed. And like I lost 25 pounds in a week. I was like emaciated and ill, and I wasn't on email, wasn't on phone. So he just thought I like blew him off. He was like devastated.
Jeez.
And finally got a hold of my roommate, and she's like, oh, Lindsay's gonna die. And we didn't go. But what's crazy is my roommates that day, like a couple days before, we were trying to get on standby flights, and they tried to get on a volcano erupted over Fiji.
Oh my gosh.
And because of it, they wouldn't take any standby passengers because they had to lessen passengers because they had to go around the debris.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't get on. But if they had gone on and gone without me, I don't know if I'd ever gone to Australia and married my husband because so the volcano erupting over Fiji and also this terrible disease, which actually meningitis, you know, I think also brought us together because then 6 months after that, I ended up going again. But this time I didn't have a soccer scholarship to run back to. It was spring and I ended up staying. My 3-week trip turned into a couple months. Fell in love with him. And his goal was, if you can fall in love with Australia, then you'll fall in love with me because you'll stay long enough, you know? So yeah. He took me on all this adventure, the Great Barrier Reef. It was incredible. Like, it was totally romantic. But it was just really cool because in the end, the things that seemed like such atrocities were the things that actually brought us together. Like, you know, getting sick and almost dying, volcanoes erupting over Fiji.
Right.
So I just feel like, you know, oftentimes the adversary is, you know, if we respond to our trials with faith and with light and love, like it ends up being all in God's glory anyway, and it ends up bringing you closer to the Savior, as we know, you know. So, and sometimes brings us to those who we're supposed to be with eternally, you know what I mean?
So maybe it's not so bad, is what
not
she's
so bad.
Saying.
So if you're going through something tough, if you're in the hospital sick, know that your future spouse is waiting for you.
I'm already married. Well, okay, she said my future spouse.
Anyway,
I want to ask you a couple questions. We ask everyone that comes into the Cultural Hall these questions. Do you have a calling in your ward right now? And if so, what is it?
Yeah, I'm gospel doctrine teacher.
For the adults?
Yeah, for the adults. That's I have a bunch of lawyers too. And
Old,
doctors. It's
Old
kind of
Testament.
Intimidating.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Hard, right?
It's hard. It's good, though. I have a great class. Really bright and very generous group of people.
Yeah, my class teaches themselves too, if that's what you meant. I'm like, let's ask a question. 45 minutes later, class is over. Thank you very much, everybody.
That's exactly it.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make up one in the church, what would your calling be?
Oh, wow. That's cool. If I could make up one, I would probably go around traveling and speaking to congregations, telling them to like get more engaged civilly and in charity, you know. Because I think that so many members that we have the heart for it. It's innate in us. Like we're already so service oriented, but just to help them feel empowered of doing more than just maybe like their immediate callings in church. You know what I mean? Like get more involved. Yeah.
What would you call that calling, do you think?
I don't know. Isn't that like what the general authorities do?
Yeah. A general authority. A lady. Oh, you're one of these ladies.
I'm just teasing. There's people out doing it.
Yeah,
maybe
no,
if
I'm
I
just
actually,
giving you a hard
if
time.
I think about it, there's a lot of people going around inspiring us to do good. So, but no, I mean.
But on a very civic level.
Yeah,
do,
I'd probably
do
make
good.
It more on like the philanthropic side. So maybe, I don't know, like the welfare or humanitarian services, like something like that. I'd love to engage more members because I've just seen like the power of people. Our church with 14 million members.
15.
I mean, it's a little more now, 15? Right? 15. 15 million members. I mean, just even if a fraction of us were like really, truly like busy building, building this world to be what it could be closer to Zion, you know, we are doing that. But I think even more, I think moms, especially stay at home moms, being a stay at home mom, you know, like, and I do work, like I said, from home. So it kind of makes me like not quite the same idea as a stay at home mom, but you know, like, for all the Oprah Winfrey's and Twilight books you read, like what could you be doing with your time? Like what, right. Not to like judge because I
no because you got
everybody
have
has everybody
you
has
gotta
that.
Have things
yeah.
that you enjoy otherwise
no, for sure.
If you're always going
yeah exactly but you know like I can't believe how much you can get done like even if I this wasn't my career and it wasn't a job where I was getting paid, I would do it just because, I mean, you have time. Like, you can be doing more. And I just think if everybody felt inspired, they could do more and realized, you know, that it's that what I mean, I have cute mom friends who like did, they're soccer players and they started a 3v3 tournament to try to raise money for a charity. You know what I mean? Like, you can do anything. Like, it's just pretty neat. You can take whatever you do as a mom. Mommy bloggers can use their voices to do more philanthropy and good, because so much of it's like Pinterest and craft stuff. Like,
sure.
You know, what if you incorporate it into that, like, ideas about giving back?
And it gives a purpose behind it, too.
Exactly.
Like, it's a cute handkerchief slide and money goes to whatever.
Exactly.
Or awareness goes to whatever.
So there's so much. And women are amazing. Like, moms, I mean.
Hey, men are amazing, too. And there are dad
men
bloggers.
Men are way awesome. And there are good dad bloggers. And I'm a huge fan. I'm the biggest man advocate ever. I love dudes.
Hooray for men.
I love them. But I think women are, like, it's one of those things where give it, you know, give something to a busy person, it gets done. Like, women have just an amazing ability to hit the ground running while, you know, while changing diapers. You know what I mean?
Cool.
They're awesome.
Then last question that we ask everyone here in the Cultural Hall is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
Favorite part of my faith? Oh, that is such a good question. Wow. My favorite part is, you know what? I particularly, when I think about Joseph Smith, the prophet Joseph Smith, and bringing the restoration to us, like having all of this incredible insight that we can have modern revelation, I think it's so profound what he was able to restore and the template that he left us to study. You can take what he left and study the Old Testament and the New Testament and in anything, any situation in life, you can lay it over it and it brings context that brings us closer to the Savior. So I think just living in an era where we, you know, it wasn't even so long ago that we were had this fountainhead receiving all this incredible light and insight that we can, and to understand that we can gain that ourselves. I think that it's so intimate and personal. Is probably my favorite part, because, you know, it's such a journey, like a spiritual journey. It's not something that you can be prescriptive about. And I think, that it's the resources and opportunities we have to go on that journey and come to know the Savior, literally like in mortality, you know, I mean, Elder Packer just gave a talk. Speaking of Elder Packer, he just gave a talk in this last conference about his witness. And he ends it, you know, where they said, we know he lives where we saw him. And he says, they are my words. I mean, you can literally have those kinds of experiences and witnesses in mortality. You can actually have a relationship with him here and now and not later. That is absolutely my favorite part.
I want to throw out an idea at you at the end of this and then get you out of here. I have long time teased the idea of a huge rock concert that is all for charity. And maybe it's to pay for people to go on missions from the countries where they can't afford it. Maybe it goes to organizations like, I think it's called the Liahona Foundation.
Yeah, they're great. They're
that
great.
That helps homeless.
They help starving children.
Starving children.
LDS children all over the world, yeah.
I'm not sure. But what I want it to be called is Choose the Rock. And all these bands that are have Mormon affiliates.
Like the Killers.
Like the Killers.
And the Imagine
Neon
Dragons.
Trees, Imagine Dragons, Panic at the Disco.
Choose the Rock.
We get a couple of Osmonds in here too, right? We call it Choose the Rock, and all the proceeds go to some sort of organization.
That's
like
cool.
That. I'll work with you. I'll be that.
Let's make it happen.
I'll be that poster guy.
We could do that.
Whatever it is to have that happen, but I could literally roll over the next day and be done with my mortal existence at the point that we do a huge benefit concert called Choose the Rock. Then that's it.
It's creative. I like it. We'll talk offline.
Thank you so much for coming in. It's filmraise.com, globalcitizen.org. And you can find out about the Global Poverty Project and all about Lindsay Hadley by going to her good friend, Google. It's a thing.
Google, and you can find good things. But HadleyImpact.com is my site, too, if you want to check out more about
And you can see all of her employees.
All my Mormon stay-at-home moms on there.
Is that who they all are?
Most of them,
are
yeah.
They? Yeah. That's cool. Well, we hope that this this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Thank you.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We read.